Today, the lands of the southwestern U.S. and northern Mexico are considered desert or semi-arid. But for a couple months each year, the region is awash with water from the seasonal monsoons. The normally dry riverbeds fill with floodwater and swell to create habitat for all manner of water birds and amphibians. The watery paradise is short-lived, though, and most of those streams dry up in a matter of weeks. But that wasn't always the case. A network of streams, rivers, and wetlands once crisscrossed the landscape. In fact, more than 150 years ago, around the time of the Civil War, people in the region struggled with malaria, a mosquito-borne illness typically associated with tropical, wet climates. In Mexico, I found a ranch owner that's working on ways to keep some of that water on the land longer. My journey starts at the Gadsden Hotel in Douglas, Arizona. It's a grand building with walls the color of gold and marble pillars holding up an ornately painted ceiling. A step in the gray marble staircase bears a chip, legend says was left by the Mexican revolutionary Pancho Villa when he rode his horse up these stairs. Today, it's a popular spot for weddings, and it's here that I met Valer Clark.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, this is a piece of history.
The opulence of the hotel hints at an earlier time of prosperity and wealth. Valer says the whole region, north and south of the border, was made rich more than 100 years ago by the same things.
This was copper, cotton, and cattle, the three C's, you know, all in the early 1900s.
Those three C's made a lot of money, but heavily degraded the land. Before the arrival of settlers, the region didn't have much water, but there were some dense grasslands. Forests grew alongside rivers that meandered across the open landscape, and wetlands popped up every 20 or 30 miles along those rivers. But when Valer first visited back in the 70s, decades of mining and agriculture left the arid soil dry and cracked. Few trees remained, and the riverbeds were deeply eroded. Valer came from a wealthy family in New York City. She and her husband at the time were traveling in Mexico and fell in love with the austere land. The wildness of the open parched landscape drew them in.
We just came across this ranch by accident, and he said, well, why don't we bid on it? And I bid so low, I didn't think we'd ever get it. So I was thinking in terms of this being a summer place or something like that.
That whim of a purchase of a summer place eventually ballooned into her life's work.
When I got here and started seeing the lack of water and seeing the situation, what it looked like, and the hills were bare and there was no grass, and I thought, I wonder if you could make a change. I wonder if there's something you can do about this. And I started doing it, and I realized you can, and I guess I got hooked.
Valer eventually bought and rehabilitated some 150,000 acres of land in northern Mexico in the southwest U.S. That's more than 10 times the size of Manhattan. And her work here has been transformative, says Ron Pulliam.
There are four great geological forces. There's volcanism, plate tectonics, there's erosion, and there's Valer. And Valer is one of the forces that has created the landscape around us here.
Ron is an ecologist, formerly with the U.S. Department of Interior, and founder of the nonprofit Borderlands Restoration Network. I pile into a pickup truck with Ron. Valer in her own truck leads the way out of Douglas, Arizona, and across the border to Agua Prieta, Mexico. We leave behind the Maquiladora factories in the duty-free trade zone of Agua Prieta and drive an hour southeast to Valer's ranch. Pavement and two-story buildings give way to dusty soil and brittle, pale green grass. To me, as a New Englander, the landscape looks rather inhospitable, but Ron says this is prime cattle grazing territory.
Generally speaking now, the stocking ratios are on the order of one cow for 100 to 200 acres in this area. And then think of around the turn of the century, 100 times that number of cows.
And all those cows led to disaster for this delicate landscape.
And so if you put hundreds of cows out on a small area here, you basically reduce all the ground cover. So when the rain comes, it just runs off the land rather than being caught up in the vegetation.
And keeping that rainwater on the land is the fundamental key to what Valer is doing to rehabilitate her property. More water will mean more grass and trees, habitat for the wildlife that was once common here. It's sort of a build it and they will come philosophy. We arrive at Valera's Cajon Bonito Ranch, and she takes me on a walk around her property. She wears a cowboy hat over thick gray hair, jeans, and a white button-down shirt. She is tiny, so petite one might think her fragile, but she is shockingly strong and sets a fast pace over the rugged terrain. In a similar way, Valera's solution to rehabilitating the degraded land is equally small but powerful.
This is what we call a gabion, which is a wire basket that is filled with rocks.
That's it, a wire basket full of rocks. They're about 3 feet tall, some just 5 or 6 feet wide, others more than 100 feet across. Valera and her crew have built more than 20,000 of them on her property. They all sit in riverbeds, which are dry most of the year, until the monsoon rains come. That's when the gabions get to work. They slow down the water rushing through the riverbed so silts can accumulate behind them, like a sponge.
And that sponge holds the water, and so the water, instead of just whipping through fast when it rains, 30% of it's held back and goes into the ground, and so it filters down very slowly. And this is somewhere near the bottom, so you see pools of water.
Those pools of water are home to insects, birds, rare frogs, and endangered fish species.
And trees. All these trees coming up, they're a result of having water here.
So how old are these trees? I mean, these are 30, 40 feet high or so. How old are they?
Not old at all. These go very fast. These grow very fast, these trees. Some of them grow 10 feet a year.
Nearly all these trees have sprouted up since Valera began keeping more water on the land. Near the stream, a canopy of cottonwood trees towers over us, and a lush green understory creates the feeling of a jungle that follows the narrow band of water. We continue our walk on the edge of the forest, which
and
she
searched.
Says is a vital corridor
that like
for
much
wildlife
fun. What
in the region.
Seen
it wasn't. When
seen
we were asked if we had anything to declare, Gary Paul Nabhan, an agricultural professor and researcher, said, yes, I have a couple small plants that I'm using for my research. Gary identified himself as a researcher, and we were traveling in a truck that said University of Arizona on the side of it.
My goodness, what is that?
Well, that led to us being pulled aside for further inspections. I actually
recorded
the first part of our First, you'll hear the border agent.
I almost stepped on
Gary.
Take a picture.
It's very important that you tell me everything related to agriculture.
That's a fine.
Because if I do find some of those perfect, it's
$1,000.
Do you have any fruits or vegetables?
After being startled by the venomous lizard, Valera and I head back to her ranch
about other items.
We meet up with Ron Pulliam to see more of Valera's work
and wait.
We drive past parched bare earth, packed into the shape of a hexagon, and stop at a different ecosystem altogether.
In that quick exam of the vehicle,
instead of a riparian forest, this is a
comb.
Wetland.
I mean, they
teeming
took apart
with
our suitcases,
reeds and cattails poke up through the water.
Went through
at least a dozen
bag,
different
everything.
Species of brightly colored
and
birds
in the end,
start
they
about.
Found a walking stick,
butterflies
some
sun themselves,
in Tucson,
and bright blue dragonflies populate in midair.
And a handful of seeds in Gary's pocket that he
Ron
also
Pulliam
didn't
says this region is a hotbed
we
for insect diversity,
$300 for
including some 450 different species of bees. And
it's
very
becoming a
strangely,
common
the
ordeal
desert
that botanists like Gary have to deal with every time they need to bring samples across the border for their work. You know, there's actually a list of prohibited items that you can't bring into the U.S.
Indeed, historical records from the Spanish settlers
but the border
suggest this region was once a patchwork of wetlands just like
changing.
This.
So
Gary Paul Nabhan is a desert ecologist with the University of Arizona.
In other
he
words,
says the word
Sonora,
as in the desert
exactly.
Here,
and for
actually means
like Gary
spring-fed wetland in a native
week,
language.
It ends up feeling
in
like
an area the size
of
Connecticut,
that they just
you
can't
might have
for.
20, maybe 30 of
like
these, but they were so important to human life and to wildlife that every one of them was named, and probably one in 10 is left.
Then
probably
the
more like one
and
in 20
travel
or
restrictions
one in 30.
That we talked about earlier, and it's
how
really
important
hard
are
to be a
these
scientist
types of
on the U.S.-Mexico
for the
border?
Whole region,
well,
for the ecosystem.
Truth can be a
well,
fragile commodity.
Incredibly so. It, and look at the
okay. Well, thanks, Bobby, for your report.
I'm sorry, they're showstoppers. They're just
sure
so beautiful.
Sure thing, Steve. Oh, they're bright red and they're beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, in a historical ecological sense, these were the seed beds for all the vegetation. But secondly, they were the hubs of human habitation because this is where all the ecosystem services happen. And so they were as important as the oases were in the Sahara Desert. You would travel 30 miles out of your way to reach a place like this.
And important for migrating wildlife, too. These were wet stepping stones between central Mexico and Canada. Bright and early the next morning, I meet up with Ron Pulliam to go birding near another wildlife corridor,
which it turns out was a highway of a different sort not so long ago.
Morning.
We're up for a late morning walk.
Late morning? It's 5:30.
We walk alongside a small creek, craning our necks up, hoping to spot some birds.
This creek is interesting just in itself. It was protected by Valair because it was identified as the most intact fish stream in northern Mexico, and perhaps the most intact in all of Mexico. And it had several species, five or six species of rare and endangered species. And this also used to be the bus route. And it looks like a pristine natural stream now, but in the 1950s, there was a biologist that camped on the shore right over here, and he, in the night, he counted five buses driving up the stream. This was the road between Sonora and Chihuahua.
Somehow, those endangered fish species managed to survive living in a bus route and are now on the rebound. Even beavers have recolonized the river. At one point, Valair Clark introduced a few beaver pairs to one stream on this river. But now, several more have been drawn to the water that is once again running free. And the broad-tailed volunteers are getting to the business of building dams for her. For all her ecological work, Valair is still mindful of serving as a model for other ranches in the region that depend on raising cattle for their livelihood. She removed most of the cows from her ranch when she bought the place, but she did keep a small herd and is very deliberate about where and when they graze. And it's paid off. Her ranch manager recruited members of his family to enter three Novillo steers at a large cattle exposition.
All the people in Sonora bring their animals to this big thing, this big do. And so his daughter, Sara, won first prize among the Novillos, and she won the grand champion, the overall prize. And then when the animal was slaughtered, we won overall the prize of having the best cut-up meat, too. So we couldn't get any better than that.
The hope is that public win will encourage other ranchers in the area to explore the sustainable ranching that results in award-winning beef. And Valair's biggest hope is that they will see the advantage of rehabilitating their own degraded land.
I think the next thing is having people come and see the benefits of what we've done, that it is possible to turn land around. I think it's important. The next step would really be to reach out to other people and let them know that it's possible to heal really sick land.
In fact, Valair's work is already spreading across the region, literally. The water she retains with her gabions does not stay on her land alone. It seeps into the water table and flows downstream, hydrating degraded lands for miles around. And in a region where water is wealth, Valair is already sharing in the profits of restoration.